Hi, and welcome back to the Holistic Hormonal Health Podcast. I'm Hannah Ransom, and today we have Holly Grigg-Spall with us. She wrote the book Sweetening the Pill, How We Got Hooked on Hormonal Birth Control, and she has been kind of one of the integral people lately in the I don't want to say anti-pill because I don't know if she would call herself that, but in a way she's been kind of the voice of the anti-pill people lately because of this book. And we're going to get into more of maybe some of the misconceptions that people have had about it and what she really intended with that. But I just want to say welcome to you, Holly, and thank you for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. And I wonder if you could just share a little bit more about your background and what really brought you to write this book.
Yeah, sure. So I took the pill for about 10 years from when I was 17. And I took a lot of different brands, about maybe five, over the course of that time. And then the second to last brand I tried was Yasmin, which is also known as Yaz, or different differentiation is B-Yaz. And I took that for about 2.5 years. And I had some pretty serious, in terms of their effect on my quality of life, side effects that were both physical and psychological changes that were pretty negative and became more and more obvious over that time. And I was probably about two years and some few months into taking it when I realized that it could possibly be that pill that was making me feel the way I felt. And so I started to do some research, and I read a lot of very similar stories to my own that were, you know, very specific in their similarities to the side effects I was experiencing. And that made me start reading up in my sort of hadn't studied science since I was doing GCSEs at 15 way into how that particular pill worked, which made me look into how all pills work. And I was wanting to come off it and I wasn't sure about going on to something else. And being a journalist, obviously, I wanted to write about it. And so I actually ended up writing a piece for a magazine called Easy Living called What You Should Know About the Pill, which was an interview with a doctor from the Kinsey Institute called Dr. Cynthia Graham. And it was something that she mentioned about the gender bias in medical research, and how the side effects of the pill are actually not been very well investigated, especially the sexual or psychological side effects in particular, just because of this gender bias of seeing the benefits outweighing the risks for women, not really particularly caring, perhaps being somewhat negligent about women's health and well-being in the medical industry. And so I ended up sort of using the research that I gathered that hadn't gone into that article to write a blog. And the blog expanded out from my experience on the pill to then coming off the pill after 10 years, and then sort of documenting how I felt about that. And also I was doing a lot of reading at the time, trying to figure out why, as somebody who I felt, you know, was quite engaged and quite conscious and quite critical generally as a person, was not questioning taking the drug like that every day for 10 years, a drug that could make me feel that unwell. And so the blog is really my exploration of that. I could give the subtitle, Who Am I When I'm Not on the Pill? And it kind of broadens out. It's a bit kind of a philosophical, sociological thing. And then that became a book proposal, which became a book and now a documentary. So that's kind of the trajectory that it all came originally from my own personal experience using the pill and coming off it.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds like, I mean, obviously your journey was much more involved than other people's because it became a book, but that sounds like a really, really common scenario. A lot of women having side effects all of a sudden and then realizing that the pill is not this wonder drug that they think it is. And a lot of people, one of the things that I wanted to touch on that you were talking about was even just calling it a drug. A lot of people don't really think of it as a drug. They think of it as something that's pretty much necessary and not much of a drug at all. But also, I was wondering when you were talking about the gender bias research that you were doing, I've heard a lot about women's side effects also being discounted as kind of it's in their head and mental. And did that really cover any of that?
Well, yes. You know, I think the interview that I did with her, unfortunately, it's not available online, but she specifically through the Kinsey Institute investigates sexual and psychological side effects, which are obviously very intertwined in kind of where how they come about and how they are experienced by women too. So yes, she felt that essentially doctors weren't really listening to what women were telling them about the hormonal birth control side effects, and therefore it was very difficult to get funding for research. You know, there's a very popular study that people quote, I mean, it's called the nocebo or noise study, which is about how you know, very prominent reproductive health researcher in the US came to the conclusion that it was, you know, the reason that many women come to doctors to say that they have side effects and they're experiencing them is basically due on, and it says in the piece, due on the gossip, it said, of women talking amongst themselves about their own experiences. And it kind of essentially uses that kind of Victorian idea of hysteria and women being hysterical and so being able to bring on problems themselves. And I, of course, you know, I was using a particular brand that was particularly bad for me for a very long time before I came to realize it was that. So it wasn't the first conclusion I jumped to. It was the very last, actually, thing that I thought of. I wish I'd thought it was that earlier and I would have saved myself a lot of problems. So, yeah, I mean, at that point in my life, when I did that interview with Dr. Cynthia Graham, I was very interested in this idea of how we don't think of it as a drug. And actually around this recent Hobby Lobby decision, there's been a lot of talk I've noticed about, oh, let's rename it hormonal supplements. Let's rename it hormonal balancing medication. And I couldn't think of anything more horrifying than renaming it hormonal supplements. and you know, and I'm on their side. Right. So as in, I'm on the liberal side of, yes, they can't prevent women from having access. But I still find that kind of liberal hyperbole of, oh, well, let's go the total opposite end and just act like these are just like as harmless as vitamin tablets.
Right. And I think that with that decision, I could definitely see that happening and a lot more people just complaining of certain things that they're using it as like just to balance their hormones and they're using it for other reasons. And then not only can that be, I think, an issue in and of itself, but also an issue in terms of what kind of data we have with women, what they're using it for and what they're getting out of it. Because looking at a lot of the birth control statistics and data and stuff like that, you see a lot of, well, birth control isn't only used to, you know, prevent pregnancy, but it's also used for all of these other beneficial things. And of course, I have my own issues with that because I would like us to address it in a more holistic manner rather than jumping to a drug that's just masking the symptoms. But I could see a lot of problems having that as our data, that so many people are on it for these hormonal reasons and that it's that first line supplement for hormonal things.
Well, also, it's a lot of its off-label uses, so we don't even have research on that because it's not meant to be used for it. It's one of the only drugs out there that are commonly taken that people, including doctors, will happily admit to prescribing for non-FDA approved uses.
Right. Yeah.
And I think it's very problematic when they say, "Oh, you know, 58% of women or whatever it is use it for other reasons." Well, yes, that's reasons like regulating their periods or for lighter periods. And a lot of these reasons are, yeah, maybe women are benefiting from that. No, nobody's saying that they're not, but that they don't, they're not told of the mechanism of that. They're certainly not told of, you know, how that's happening or long term, what that might mean for them. So I mean, the point is that it's like, well, it's being prescribed. If it's being prescribed at the high rates that it's been discussed in the last week or so as being prescribed for hormonal issues, what I keep thinking to myself, well, what does that say? Does that say that the majority of women out there have severe hormonal imbalances, though they're experiencing incredibly painful periods, very irregular cycles? What are they experiencing? Secondly, or are we basically saying that the majority of women are sick, and that we've expanded that meaning of the term sick, as in they need a drug because they're hormonally imbalanced, to include people who aren't really.
Yeah.
And who are actually having pretty regular normal periods, but are finding them insufferable because we don't tolerate it as a society anymore, or because we think that women are inherently sick because we think women are the only people who have hormone cycles and change and different, you know, different moods throughout a month. And it's a very scary thing difficult conversation to have when you go to this point of, well, so many women use it for these other reasons. You're like, well, what are you saying when you say that, really?
Yeah. There's so many. I mean, I've written about it in the past, and I'm sure people can find it, but there's so many things that talking about hormonal contraceptives used in a way that's not a contraceptive. There's so many different reasons that can be risky and not the best thing. And for some people, it is something good. I hope that everyone can't hear the helicopter flying around my house, but for some people, it is going to be necessary, maybe as a short-term thing, or maybe for other things that aren't very common, but the rate at which we prescribe it is not great. But I wanted to touch on, when you were talking about, you also talked about the nocebo effect and the mental things. And I know a lot of the feedback that you were getting when you wrote the book was that from other people who are also, you know, feminist, pro-choice, pro-birth control rights, all that stuff, that are very pro-pill, and they really didn't like the questioning of the pill because they believed that if you talked about it more, it would prevent people from getting on it. It would make people think that they had side effects that they didn't have, or that something was because of the pill that wasn't. And so I wanted to kind of touch on the reactions you got from people, and also why you really wrote it, which I saw, of course, as a critique of something that isn't critiqued, even though you're not necessarily anti-pill. You're just for a lot more conscious use of it and knowing what's going into the use of it. So I would love for you to touch on that.
Yeah, well, I think I wrote it partly as, obviously, I'm British, if people hadn't picked up on that yet. And that gave me an outsider view. And in the UK, we have the National Health Service, the NHS, for pregnancy prevention. It's free. You can get free any form of contraception that you want. If you want to take it for a medical issue, you pay about $10-$12 for a prescription, which is normal, any prescription. So you come, I come from a very, very different place, and I sort of accidentally on purpose walked into something that I wouldn't have at the time of starting my blog foreseen as such a controversial issue, because in the UK you would never have the discussions that people have here, like with the Hobby Lobby about, and it's not a moral issue. Mm-hmm. And it's not nobody even discusses whether or not people should be able to have abortions in the UK. I mean, if it's a very, very fringe extremist view to not assume that that's fine. So it's quite a different perspective. And yes, when I started going into it for the book, by that point, I was definitely very aware. And I found it quite fascinating because I realized that basically we were in a situation where discussion of the actual side effects and health concerns about the pill, and mainly, you know, my real motivation was to prevent women from going through what I went through. That's honestly the reason I wanted to write about this, is because I was just horrified that you could spend 2.5 years as miserable as I was and not realize you were doing it to yourself by taking a pill that you really didn't need to take. Mm-hmm. And that was horrible for me. I had a horrible experience and it was utterly unnecessary. And, you know, I think what happened with that pill, Yasmin and Yaz, and what happened with the blood clot situation and the lawsuits and the way that that wasn't reacted to particularly intelligently by the liberal feminist side of the discussion, was interesting to me, because I felt like, as I say, the side effects and discussion around health seem to be very much have been co-opted entirely by the right, the religious right side, that made it into a moral issue, which was not only about the health and safety of women in part, but also about the health and safety of unborn children. And that kind of obviously skews the argument a lot, and it obviously leaves the women in between who have taken hormonal birth control, not liked it, aren't aware of any alternatives out there, think they have to take it, think it's their only choice, have no understanding of their fertility. That kind of leaves them adrift in a lot of ways, between their, you know, the political side in this country that they may feel an affinity with, that sees the pill as a symbol of liberation. The pill was sort of bestowed on women by women for their good, and that, you know, we're meant to sort of grab it with both hands. And then this sort of other side that's pretty imposing, that you don't, you know, that they perhaps aren't politically affiliated with in the majority if you're a woman. And, you know, that is a little alienating in the way it's approaching this. But in the end, my conclusion that I came to, which I see more and more prominently all the time, is that neither side of this debate seems to have the best interests of women at heart. Yeah. It's really a political game to do with, you know, controlling essentially births,
right?
And women's fertility. And with one side, you want to see babies born by any means possible, and the other side wants to not see babies born by any means possible. And yeah, the means on both sides are problematic, because the means on both sides are restrictive to women. Whether that's saying, well, women shouldn't have access to the morning after pill, or whether it's saying all women should be using, you know, this new wireless device that stays in your body for 16 years because it's so easy and convenient. I don't really see either of those as particularly respectful of women's individual autonomy.
Right. Yeah. Education, I think, is so, so important, and just a supportive environment to make choices to do with birth control and whatever you choose to do with your reproduction. And I know I've talked about it before on my social media pages, and actually just in my post last week about women's experiences at the gynecologist, because a lot of doctors don't always, I don't want to say that they don't have women's best interests in their mind, but maybe they don't realize how much influence they have, and or if they do, they don't care. They think that they know best, and that their best interest is to listen to them at all costs and do what they think is best for them. Mm-hmm. So I think that can be a huge, huge problem. And really, women knowing about what their options are in terms of birth control and really being able to stand firm in that and being educated about that and having a good source of learning about those things is really important. And I know that in your book, even though you don't use fertility awareness yourself, you talk a lot about fertility awareness because mm-hmm. you believe that an understanding of fertility awareness is so important to making a birth control choice and understanding your body when you're coming off hormonal contraceptives. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that and where you yeah. really see it fitting in.
Well, I when I was coming off the pill, I really thought that it was a very risky situation and that I thought that I could get pregnant any day of the month and that I would have to really be, you know, terribly vigilant to avoid it, and that I was perhaps being irresponsible and I totally wasn't ready to have to get pregnant. You know, I wasn't doing it because I was in any place in my life where I felt that pregnancy would be an okay option or a happy accident or anything like that. It wouldn't have been a good idea. I was living with my mother-in-law and I was working at Target, and I was trying to move to LA. And so, you know, I didn't want to lead a life of exchanging the anxiety of a side effect of the pill as a side effect of the pill to anxiety about getting pregnant. So I read a book called The Pill, Are You Sure It's For You? By Jane Bennett and Alexandra Pope. And they talk a lot about the fertility awareness methods in that book. And I spoke to Jane Bennett on the phone to write about it for my blog. And she sent me a kit with a thermometer and a book and worksheets and things like that to learn about this method. And learning just about my cycle is more that I wanted to learn about, get body literacy, as Laura Wershler calls it, get, you know, an understanding of my body so that I could better transition off the pill with confidence. I wouldn't be anxious about getting pregnant. I wouldn't be, you know, not feeling like I was in a responsible situation or in control, that I felt, you know, I wanted all those things. And my body was changing a lot because I'd been on it for 10 years. So I was having all these things that might seem like, you know, scary withdrawal effects, but a lot of them were just my cycle going back to what it would have been had I not been suppressing it. And, you know, I had a lot of changes otherwise than that. And so it was really a support mechanism for me. And that's how I really have encouraged it in the book, as really a thing that every woman, I feel, should be able to learn fertility awareness as a concept and body literacy as a knowledge, whether or not you're going to use it for contraception. And that's how I feel. I did use it for a while, as in I tracked my cycle and I did all those things. But then in recent months, it hasn't been something that I've been doing. So I use condoms, and it's not something that I'm focused on, but I have in the past, and I have that knowledge and I'm aware of it. And even when I'm not tracking, I still feel I use fertility awareness in that. Yeah. I am aware of when I'm ovulating. I'm aware of when I'm going to get my period. I'm totally keyed into how I feel differently. And it really helps me, because I know if I'm feeling depressed, or I know if I'm feeling really angry, that I know it will pass. And I know, you know, that ways to use it ways to use those feelings in a way that's helpful to me, rather than sort of constantly feeling like, oh, I'm up and down, and finding that very worrying. So yeah, as I say, it's really, for me, it was a support to come off. I don't know if I would have come off and stayed off the pill without learning about my cycle. I think I would have found it very hard, actually, to make that commitment to not be on hormonal birth control without that knowledge. And I think a lot of women do, and a lot of women go back on because they think, you know, what they're going through for the 6 months after they've come off is how it's always going to be, or they feel like it's too much to cope with, or they just feel like there's too much pressure from their partner or to, you know, be on top of everything. And I think, you know, if you don't feel like you know what's going on, it can be very difficult. And within about 3 months, I had a pretty good grasp. I read a lot and I spoke to people on the phone. I did a lot of little mini interviews and I just got really into learning about it. And then I just felt a lot more confident. And now I'm now something like 5 years later, and I feel very, very happy with the decision I made. And I feel like it was one of the best things I'd ever done for myself, really.
Yeah. Definitely. I think that's so true, that fertility awareness is just a really amazing piece of knowledge, whether you're going to use that as birth control or not, because there's so many things that you can do with that knowledge, including empowering yourself at the doctor's when you have information and knowledge of your body and understanding your hormones, and like Holly was talking about, the moods changing, and how you can really work with that. And I think that that's, it's definitely good knowledge to have. I mean, if you put a little bit of time into it, like you were talking about, Holly, you really can understand your body so well, even if you aren't, necessarily trying to, you mm-hmm. just are that in tune with everything.
Yeah. That's the thing, is once you've got that knowledge, then you really just don't have to, chart every day if it isn't something that comes part of your life in that way. I still am totally aware. I still feel like I'm fertility aware, regardless of that, because, you know, even if I'm not taking my temperature, I still see changes in my cervical mucus. I still feel the mood changes. I still feel my body changes and all like the secondary symptoms that I have.
Yeah.
So it's, I used to, when I was on the pill, I would never really trust it, because it's like anything that you get given when you're young and you don't really get explained to about how it works. And, you know, you just think, well, I'm taking that, I assume it's preventing me from getting pregnant. And so I would worry, you know, that it wasn't doing that, or if I took it 2 hours later, or, and so, you know, I would worry actually a lot about getting pregnant. And now, 5 years into being off the pill, I don't worry at all.
Yeah.
Which is, people think it's the opposite. You know, people always say, oh, you know, she talks in her book about having anxiety after coming off the pill and going through withdrawal, which I did. I had some pretty nasty kind of withdrawal, like insomnia, anxiety and things. And they're like, oh, isn't that funny? Of course she's anxious because she's worried she's going to get pregnant. And I'm like, well, yeah, for the first few weeks I was. But then after that, I'm like, I don't, because I'm pretty sure if it were to happen, I would know very quickly. Whereas when I was on the pill, I would have been, if I'd missed and something had happened, I would have no idea where I was.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I am going to be linking your information below and everything, but if you want to let people know where they can find you, and again about your book and
everything is pretty much linked from my website, sweeteningthepill.com. That links to the Facebook page, the Twitter, the original blog, and also, you know, any of the media coverage that there's been and how to buy the book. And then at the moment, the documentary was inspired by the book is in production. So there's not really anything more to say on that, except it's coming.
Except it's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming and
Thanks for having
letting
me.
everyone know what you're all about.